succession number 21279, Reel 7.
Cyril Williams, Reel 7. So this chap was wearing a woman's coat.
Yes, he'd taken it from upstairs, and people were wrapped in curtains and coats as well, because it was so cold. And most of the windows had either been blasted out by the Germans or knocked out, because we don't want flying glass. But you pay a penalty for that. Anyway, I'm pleased that the only one to vote to surrender, we've had enough, he said, was the one wearing the woman's coat. And somebody said to him, you'd better get that bloody woman's coat off, you know, because it's having an effect on you. So we carried on, but it was...
So you had Germans each side of the house?
Well, mainly on the other side, because we were part of the perimeter, and we were actually against the SS. Some of them, I didn't know it at the time, were Dutch SS, which... I think the Dutch are great, and they were marvellous to me when I was a prisoner. But they had the biggest Nazi party on the continent, apart from the German Nazi party. So anyway, it was obvious that we were not going to last too long, except you keep thinking it'll get better. In fact, I had benzodiazepine tablets that every glider pilot had, and although I felt terribly tired and weary, I never took one to boost me, because I thought, well, things aren't good, but they might be worse yet. So what happened to them, I really don't know. But water was very, very short, and it had a small garden in this house, and somebody had had a parachute silk to wrap around himself. And actually, I think I'd had one earlier, because when you dig a hole, then to keep your gun clean, it's sandy soil in this part of Holland, then you want something clean, like a, you know, a bit of parachute fabric, then you can rest your gun and it doesn't pick up sand and all this muck. But I got somebody a spare helmet. There was quite a few spare helmets then. And it was spread out on a dustbin lid in the garden. It had started to rain. And I put the remnants of the parachute there. And I was wanting to collect water. And in fact, I'd collected some. And I'd put them in a vase above the fireplace. And I'd popped in a purification tablet. Must have been a pernickety child, and that was spilling over. If I'd been sensible, I'd have had the dirty water without waiting for the tablet, because we were being thumped quite hard then. Anyways, the house rocked. The water went off. You know, that. So that was it. But then, as there was small arms stuff at the front, we were all gathered there, to thinking they were going to try and storm the house there. And there was a lot of explosions then, mortars and I think tank stuff. And there were two of us there, and anyway, as I was crouching down in the sort of hallway, I remember stupidly thinking, why can I see daylight and a bit of the garden, the front garden there? But what it was, a hole had been blasted in this, and it had hit me, the explosion, and a fellow who was with me, and he looked worse off to begin with. Both his hands were bloodied, and when it quietened down, two of the chaps got hold of this fellow and led him off to find a dressing station. And then I don't know how long it was later, when they got back and there was a sufficient lull. And then it was obvious I was badly smashed there. I didn't know that I'd been hit in both legs and, you know, the feet. And anyway, they came out with a stretcher, and two of my good friends, they put me on this thing. And I remember it was still raining, although I wasn't collecting water anymore. I forgot the thirst. I don't know when I got the first drink, you know, after that. But they tied me on this low airborne stretcher, and they couldn't get me over the paling fence. It was difficult. So I said, put me down. So they put me down and tied me. And I was being helped over the paling fence. And this thing, it was going like a pendulum. So, and I couldn't feel much. So I thought, well, that is not good. But I really think if the Germans had seen me at that point, and there were lots of Germans about, I think they took pity on us. And anyway, got taken to this dressing station.
For the benefit of the tape, when you say that thing, you mean your arm?
Yes.
Yes. Which you've now lost.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So, yes, the Germans must have seen.
Yeah, I think so. And I think
young lads all trying to get...
Yeah, I really think they were compassionate at that particular point. But when I got to this dressing station, that was full, and the big lawns were full. I got put on a bit of side lawn, and the wounded and dead all over the show. And
where was the dressing station? Do you know?
It was just a private house that had been offered. And, well, it was a Kate de Host or somebody. She was became quite well known, you know, because of her compassion and assistance then. And what a mess that place must have been, you know, inside. But anyway, this one of these blokes who'd carried me, he pushed off, you know, to get back to the house. The other fellow stayed with me, and he'd got two cigarettes left. He got one, and he gave one to me, and then he went off, and he was killed later. So,
what was his name?
Thompson. Uh-huh. And he, his mother was a single woman. He told me this. And he's not in the Airborne Cemetery, but I did find out a few years after the battle where he was buried. Right. So I went there.
So the dressing station was just behind the front line, as it were?
Well, yes. I mean, this shrinking perimeter, and it was shrinking. I mean, if people, you know, were wounded or killed, then there were fewer to hold the perimeter. And I was hit on, I think it was 20... It was about something past 10, the Monday morning. And what I didn't realise, none of us did in that house, that... That night, those who survived were going to withdraw down to the river, where Canadian engineers with inflatables were going to pick them up. Now, a lot of them got wounded and killed there. In fact, I fancy where this chap is buried, it's some miles downriver from Oosterbeek and Arnhem, that probably he was hit either trying to swim the river or when he was in one of these inflatable boats, you know, that was hit. So
so who was manning this dressing station?
Well, I don't... There would be a few orderlies. And I don't know whether there was an English doctor there. I never got in it. I didn't get any treatment. In fact, Thompson, he gave me the cigarette and then he said something vulgar to one of the British orderlies. So he said, thanks for... Because the fellow couldn't do anything. Yeah. There was probably nothing to do. But he was peeved that he didn't even come to look. But he couldn't have done any good, you see. My own friends from the house, they'd put a shell dressing on. That's as much as they could do.
Had you had any first aid training of any sort in all your years of training?
No. No, I think I'd done more in the boys, more in the Boy Scouts. But
do you think they should have done some sort of?
Yeah, possibly, but it depends on the level of troops. I think that even though the army sorted graded people, in fact, when I was at the tank ranges in Westmoreland, there were pioneer corps men there, and they were so thick that they weren't allowed to carry weapons. They had pickaxe handles, and they had to be humoured, we were told. Well, it was, well, the fact that they found that they couldn't give them any arms training there.
And they may have been illiterate anyway.
Yes, but if in fact it had been any sort of reasonable traditional battle, then I suppose that, well, there'd have been an orderly along in a matter of minutes. And nowadays, of course, there'd be a helicopter winging its way in a few minutes as well, and you'd be carted off. Yeah.
So you lay on your stretcher on the lawn?
Yes. Yeah. Difficult to tell, because Thompson had got to go off, and maybe I was lapsing in and out of consciousness. I really do not know. But
were you in pain?
No. And I'd read or been told that that's a bad sign. If you don't feel much pain, then you've got a big one. Yeah. So, no, there was none of that. But then...
Who was lying around you? You were in the midst of other people, were you?
Well, they were coming all the time. I've only found out recently that a chap who's retired brigadier and another fellow, we were on a boat trip from Bristol, and it was organised by the present Army Air Corps, and the brigadier was one of our, I think he was a major at the time. He was hit on the same day, so was the other fellow, and the three of us must have been lying not far away, within hailing distance.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah. But then I got carted. There were a few jeeps, of our jeeps in action, and days ago, they decided that virtually all the, the heavier gun ammunition had gone, and there were so many wounded that they would use the jeeps just for carrying wounded. So I, who was supposedly walking wounded then, and I could walk with assistance, got on the front seat of the a jeep, and then there were two stretchers sticking out behind the jeep, and we got being carted off to a hospital, we were told, but the road was being shelled, and the flag, the Red Cross flag, was flapping away, I noticed, but I also noticed three Germans sitting by, squatting by the side of a road, with the guns ready. And we went to the next corner, and I saw a group of our people, just two. So I shouted, they're along to the next corner. But the driver, correctly, he bawled. He said, "Sarge, you're under the Red Cross. No, nothing like that again." So it was the right thing to do. But if I could have signalled quietly, I would have done it.
Yeah, amazing. It must have been quite a trip, then.
It was a trip, and it was... It seemed to be a crowded shop. Broken glass all over the place. And I got no treatment there. Nobody got treatment at that stage. But SS people started to come in. So, that seemed to be it. but they disappeared after about half an hour. And
the
then
usual wounded SS, were they?
No, they weren't. No, they were just making an appearance and stamping their authority. And then they disappeared for a short while, so it looked as though the ebb and flow, you know, they'd been driven off. And any minute we were expecting 30 Corps to come along, led by General Horrocks. But anyway, we didn't. And then SS trucks came along, marked with the SS flag. And they were obviously collecting walking wounded. So this SS lad motioned me up. And as I'd got the leg wounds, and I was aware of that then, I, you know, went, you know, and pointed to, and blood-stained trousers, so that was obvious. But anyway, he tried to get me up, and when I wouldn't go, just did a little bit of knocking about. This is the only grouse I've got about the Germans. I was well treated. And in fact, although there were other wounded lying near me, when I got hold of his legs and thought, you know, stop that, I was trying to knock him down then. And in fact, others were shouting, you know, go on, Sarge, get him down. Anyway, this commotion brought another SS, an officer, along. And when he saw the situation, he gave this outish one a real ticking off. And earlier on, there was a part of the battle when I'd got an SS fellow. Most of them were SS there. German paras as well, actually. Although they weren't, they were acting as ordinary infantry. I'd got a young SS fellow out. I know I was young at the time, but he looked about 17. And I'd put him on a stretcher, and I'd offered him a cigarette. He wouldn't take it, but said, you know, thank you. And this apparently, although I didn't know it at the time, Hitler didn't smoke, so few, if any, SS people smoked. So anyway, I was just sitting by this chap that I'd just pulled out of this wood where a lot of people were lying in ferns, and this para sergeant came along, tipped him up and grabbed the stretcher. And really, I would have stopped him, even if I had to put a bullet through his foot, you know, for doing that. Because that German, if he lived, he would have thought the British were terrible. Yeah. He wouldn't think that I was good in helping him out, you know. Yeah. So that's... So I'm not anti-German, you know, because of this lout. So, anyway, I'm rambling quite a lot. And
all right, yeah. So, did you get taken out as walking wounded? Or?
No, not for the time being, but... I did, I don't know whether it was a few hours or whether it was the next day, you know, it was as bad as that then. So then, back to the dear old SS, a number of us were locked in the back of, maybe it was an ambulance there, and got taken to Appledoon, which is about 20 miles north of Arnhem, and... I didn't know it then, but the Germans were making the civilian population evacuate Arnhem and Oosterbeek as punishment. And I got put into a proper Dutch hospital for a time, and where they were marvellous to me. A night nurse used to come along and give me a cigarette, a British cigarette, every night. And, well... They were excellent there.
And that hospital was at
Appledoon.
How do you spell that?
Appledorn. It's where the Kaiser spent his exile after the First World War.
Right, okay. So they fixed you up there. What was the extent of your injuries?
Well, before I went to a proper hospital, I'm forgetting this, I was sent to the cavalry barracks. The cavalry barracks had been evacuated by soldiers, and it was being used as an emergency hospital. Because, I mean, there was German wounded all over the show, but I suppose there'd be more of our wounded because we told Little to hit back with, you know, towards the end. But that's the conditions were appalling there. They'd taken our boots away. They'd taken our helmets away in case they were used offensively or to try and escape. So the only good thing was that the well, until they took the helmets away, that badly wounded people were urinating in them. You did get drinks there, and you got fed out. I remember a sort of metal wash basin, and this was to be shared by five people, one spoon. Oh, it was dreadful. I'm fussy, even now, about fatty meat, and there were lumps of fat in this thing, but anyway, from the barracks, they gave me treatment, and I knew then, I'd known before that, well, I either got treatment and I'd lose my arm because this was, you know, blacky blue and gangrenous. And if I didn't get treatment, once it got to the shoulder, then that was it. And I honestly pondered, you know, whether I wanted treatment or not. So anyway, when it came time for my treatment, this was the first treatment that I'd had, apart from the field, the shell dressing that the chaps had put on. Wounded 10 o'clock, or there a little after 10 o'clock on the Monday morning, and this was after 8 o'clock on the Thursday. So it was a long wait. So,
it was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So young and fit.
Yeah.
Trying to survive, yeah. So, I mean, they had to do surgery in the hospital.
Yeah, it was a British surgeon. And okay. He said, I said, do what you can, sir, to save it. He just said, no, no chance, something like that. So, you know, that was that. But I was then moved within a couple of days to a proper hospital. That's where the Dutch nice night nurse came in with her cigarettes that, you know, they'd found and were keeping them for the wounded. She was great.
Yeah. So you were in that hospital for a while?
Yes. I could have spent the rest of the war there. It was so good. In fact, I had a private room. The bloke in with me, a fellow called Webster, he was conscious at times, but he lapsed into unconsciousness. And apart from the nurses, not many of them knew much English. I mean, all the Dutch people know English now, but they didn't then. I had a a padre, well, a priest rather. He was a Dutchman, and he was very, very good, telling me about the progress of the battle. I tell you what, I had another visitor, and listen to this, because it's a, I still, well, I think it's an extraordinary tale. Fellow came in, padre. And, how are you? How are you getting on? Anything you want? I said, you know, the usual things. Yes, I wouldn't mind a spot of leave or some visitors. But I said, I wouldn't mind a toothbrush. He said, I'll see what I can do. A couple of days later, he appeared with a wooden-handled toothbrush. He said, I've got this from the Dutch. It's been properly sterilised. I said, oh, thanks very much, Padre. And he went out of the room. Within a few minutes, he came back and he said, you are one of us, aren't you? And he named his brand of religion. And I said, no. But I am a Christian, aren't we all? He got hold of the brush and he said, you do understand, don't you? Well, I didn't, and I still don't understand. I thought that was terrible.
So what brand of Christianity was he?
Well, he was the same as my daughter-in-law and my three granddaughters. He was Catholic.
Right.
But it doesn't matter to me. But I thought it was a terrible thing to do.
Terrible.
So, and really, if it had been now, I would have given him a roasting. And
yeah. For heaven's sake, you've got someone who's, what, just 21-year-old lad who's just lost his arm.
Yeah, I thought it was terrible.
Yeah.
It was terrible.
It's unbelievable, isn't it, really?
Yeah. But when I've told that story, and I've told it a few times, I don't tell it where my first son lives. I wouldn't like to hurt and offend his wife.
Yeah. I think there was a bigger divide years ago.
Yeah.
I think there was years ago, wasn't there? It's almost gone now, but... Mm.
No, I don't, but I did hear that one padre was killed supposedly for breaking his parole. And I thought, well, if it's that bloke, I'm not sorry. Mm. And were I able, I wouldn't have attended his funeral. So,
so you hung on to the toothbrush, did you?
He took it. No.
No. Goodness me. The classic.
Yeah.
So how long did you stay in the hospital?
There, 2 delightful weeks, actually. The matron was like the old matrons that we used to have and used to keep hospitals in order. But I was told, when I was given a dressing in the quite early in the morning, I tried to keep part of a cigarette, and I wanted to smoke while they were mucking it about because it was quite unpleasant. Mm. There were paper bandages, and it was unpleasant. But I was told, no smoking, because matron or that. But anyway, she was a good-hearted old dragon, because when I had the cigarette, instead of saying, as they all expected, get rid of that, she, I wasn't puffing at it because I wanted it to last.
Yeah.
But they were very, very kind indeed.
Yeah.
So, alas... We were going to be... perhaps I could mention this thing, because it brings us together, in a way, in the war. When I needed to go... I was getting food for the first time in ages. So I needed to go to the loo, which we never used in those days. And a Dutch nurse, she aided me to go to the toilet. She was going to... out of kindness, leave the door open, but out of sensitivity, I closed it. And when I was ready to go off, she wasn't there. So I thought, well, I'll wander around and see if I can find any people I know. So I went into this room, this big ward, and they were all, they were British. And I said, any glider pilots, particularly from F Squadron? Blank, hostile looks. They were all German wounded in there. So.
Cyril Williams, end of Reel 7.